Hi, I am Vengeance.
And I am the Knight.
And we are Grounded Geeks.
Where we make the geek world. Oh, I fucked up.
This is going to be such a cool intro, Lena.
Okay, let's try again. Again, from the top. Ready? Go.
Hi, I am Vengeance.
And I am the Knight.
And we are Grounded Geeks.
Where we bring the geek world to justice.
And bring justice to the geek world.
Booyah.
All right. We got it.
We got it. Okay. I might just keep both versions just for the hell of it.
Yeah. Why not?
So, as many of you may be able to tell, we are talking about
The Batman.
The Batman. We're finally doing this episode. Hooray. Yes. Finally got around to watching it.
It's mostly my fault because I hate movie theaters.
Yeah. And you also have a small child. So
also that, but mostly because I've just realized I do not enjoy the movie theater experience. I was like watching this movie and I was like, you know, this would have been a lot more fun if I could have paused this and used the bathroom.
Yeah. I like being cozy on my couch and I can create my own nice little theater experience without dealing with other people and strangers and their annoying eating and chewing habits and being loud and obnoxious or whatever. Anyway, maybe we're just getting old.
It's entirely possible. But, you know, I was thinking about it, and every single movie that I've gone to see, it's not because I was like, oh, let's go to the theaters. It's always been like, this is a particular movie I want to see right now.
Yeah.
You know, this
and
is
to avoid spoilers. I need to see it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Every single, even well before the pandemic, you know, even when I would just go to the movie theaters for fun, it would be like all my friends want to go to the theaters. So I'd go with them. And it's like, okay, this is fun, you know, but I don't think I've ever, like, I've realized, I don't think I've ever enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Like for the sake of going to the theater, you know?
Yeah. I used to, I can enjoy it if I go in the right mindset and stuff. But now I don't know. I prefer it to be at home. I have my snacks. I have my couch, you know, like I don't need to pay $10 for like
3 M&Ms.
Exactly. So Okay. So Aman, first impressions.
First impressions. Ah, finally, we have the world's greatest detective.
Yes.
You know, I mean, Detective Comics, like that was Batman, was Detective Comics, not Action Comics was Superman. Detective Comics was Batman. Mm-hmm. And finally, in live action, we have a version of Batman where he really, truly does have to play a detective. And I absolutely love that. I love that because I've missed it. You know, I don't know. It's just been a component that's always been missing from every single iteration of Batman. I feel like it's always every single movie from the Michael Keaton Batmans to who was after that? Val Kilmer, George Clooney, I guess, even Christian Bale. They are always they're always reacting to a situation. They're not trying to solve a mystery. They're not trying to solve a crime. They are reacting and responding to a specific problem.
Yeah. And I feel like with all those previous movies that you just mentioned, there's always been way more of an emphasis on his playboy alter ego personality, you know, Bruce Wayne, and making sure they almost have James Bondified Batman in movies a lot. If you know, you know, like making sure he's sexy and you got like all these sexy actors and whatever. I do think the Christian Bale version finally took it to a much better, higher level. And, you know, like they made him a bit deeper than just like, ooh, look, it's Batman. It's Bruce Wayne. So hot. You know,
to be fair, though, actually, to the Christopher Nolan, Christian Bale version of the Batman or a Batman trilogy, you know, in Batman Begins, before he decides to become Batman, he really is very much of a loner and recluse at the beginning of Batman Begins.
Yeah.
You know, he is actually that, but they don't delve into that nearly as deeply as they did in this movie.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And the whole Playboy thing is always a more experienced Batman.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a persona that he's created after he has become the Batman and realized he needs to keep up appearances.
Right.
Or keep up some kind of a facade.
Yeah. And in this one with Robert Pattinson, they kind of made it clear, right, that this is sort of the beginnings of Batman.
Yes.
Like the younger-ish Batman. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Alfred says you've been at this for 2 years now.
Yeah. Yes, he does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah. I thought that was also very interesting. I very much enjoyed seeing him be a detective. And while he obviously still had fighting skills, the biggest emphasis wasn't just on his fighting, you know?
Yes.
And I think a lot of that has happened also with previous Batman movies. Also in general, like, with those previous movies were so formulaic in that sense. They're like, we need someone hot, we need someone buff, we need someone who can fight, you know? And that's what they did to Batman, and they weren't sadly true to the core of his character in those other movies.
Yeah, I don't know if that's necessarily the right way to put it. I mean, Batman has been around for, as a character, has been around for like 100 years, so he's gone through a lot of different versions. You know, like, think about the Adam West Batman, you know, that is just as much Batman as Christian Bale's Batman, you know, not as good. I would say that the absolute like Batman that actually gets to the core of everything Batman is probably Lego Batman.
Yes. You've told me this numerous times. I have still not seen that movie.
What?
I know. Come on. You haven't seen The Joker, okay?
Okay, so, fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. Anyway.
Fair.
Okay, so detective skills, check. Loved that. What was also really fun and interesting to see, you just mentioned this, but we see Batman as kind of a loner. Look, seems to have a little bit of social awkwardness to him.
Not just that, but a traumatized Batman.
Yes. Finally, thank you for acknowledging that a child who has seen his parents murdered before his eyes, like, let's explore what that looks like when that child grows up, you know?
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking throughout the film, like, thank you finally for actually acknowledging it, you know, and not just making it like, yep, his parents were murdered, you know, and that's it. So there's like, no follow through on it.
I mean, every previous iteration of Batman, it has felt like his parents getting murdered is a MacGuffin, as opposed to something that really shapes the core of who he is as a person.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess by MacGuffin, what I mean is that, like, this is just the impetus that drove the plot forward in the direction of him turning into Batman.
Yeah.
Not this is a child who is now, in old timey terms, touched in the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
In newer terms, totally fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he goes out and becomes Batman.
Yeah.
You know, obviously he doesn't care about being Bruce Wayne. At first that bothered me, you know, because one of the things that I've liked about Batman is that it's not just that he is vigilante at night, but he's also like a good person. So in his effort, in his persona as Bruce Wayne, many times you see this in Zack Snyder's version of Batman. All right. You see this in Batman, the animated series, and lots of other iterations where, as Bruce Wayne, as the CEO of Wayne Enterprises, he actually cares about his employees. He cares about the work that Wayne Enterprises is doing, you know, but then I had to remind myself, this is just 2 years into him being Batman. Yeah. He's still going to be fucked up in the head. Maybe later on, he evolves into the kind of person who then starts to also care about the impact he has as Bruce Wayne.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I came to terms with that pretty quickly.
Yeah. I feel like there should be some sort of spin-off movie or TV series where it's like Batman goes to therapy. What does that look like? Because how, you know, it's, you need professional help at this point, you know, to help, I don't know, just like move on from a lot of that trauma. It's a lot.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah. Which I'm surprised he did not get the therapy
Well, maybe he's getting secret therapy. Who knows?
It's not working.
Yeah.
It's clearly not working. It hasn't worked.
Yeah.
I would actually enjoy that. A web series, maybe.
Right?
Yeah. Like a mini web series. Batman and teletherapy.
Do you think he would reveal to his therapist that he's Batman? Would he attend therapy as Bruce Wayne, who also reveals that he's Batman? Or would he attend therapy as Batman?
So there are versions of Batman out there where he does have a therapist who does know his secret identity.
Yes. And because of doctor-patient confidentiality, I'm sure he'd be okay.
No, because doctor-patient confidentiality, and including clergy confidentiality, like confessions and whatnot, there is a limit, which is, you know, unless you are going to be an imminent harm to yourself or others,
right,
they have an obligation to reveal it to law enforcement.
Okay. All right, then.
So it would have to be somebody he really trusts. He wouldn't just be able to be like, hi, I'm Batman.
Yeah, that's true.
I need some help with some childhood trauma.
Yeah. Yeah.
As you can tell, I'm now Batman.
Right.
I need help.
Anyway, tangential thought there. What did I want to bring up? I forget.
What are your thoughts, Lena, on the villain?
I thought the Riddler was great. I also, Paul Dano is a fantastic, phenomenal actor, in my opinion. He has
such a creepy smile.
Super creepy. He just is so, I don't know. I've really loved him ever since I first saw him in Little Miss Sunshine. And he transforms into every role. So he's phenomenal at that. And we were talking about this earlier, but this is the first time we've seen the Riddler not be treated as a joke. Which is funny because there is a character named the Joker, and even he wasn't treated as a joke as much as the Riddler was, you know?
Yeah.
So originally when I thought of the Riddler, all I would think of was Jim Carrey in his like really creepy green leotard costume with the question marks on it. Like, okay, dude. And you know, he's not just speaking in rhyming riddles everywhere. Like it wove together really well with the creepy, not kidnapping people, but secretly killing them and murdering people and whatever. Like the way it was done, it was just so creepy and devious. But the way that he also liked to leave riddles, like it made so much sense. It was such a full and complete character that they created.
And somebody who is supposed to be as smart as the Riddler, I would say this is the first time that really showed, at least in live action, you know?
Yeah.
And it makes sense that if you're going to make this first movie, The Batman, where it is trying to portray the Batman as the world's greatest detective, the Riddler is kind of the only villain that is probably the best villain to really bring that aspect of the Batman out in him. Mm-hmm. There's a theory out there that I read that every single one of Batman's villains is a corrupted version of him.
Of him, you know? Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like somebody who is just to go through examples, somebody who is as traumatized as Bruce Wayne, he could have been so messed up in the head that he would have been like the Joker.
Yeah.
What if Bruce Wayne used his wealth in a bad manner? Mm-hmm. You know, as a bad person, as a villain, you know, that would be the Penguin.
Right.
And what if instead of a detective, he was doing the opposite, creating the problems to be solved?
Creating,
that's the Riddler.
Creating mysteries instead of creating solving
mysteries.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know where Condiment Man fits into this, but that's besides the point.
Right.
All right. Yes. Yeah. There was an actual Batman villain called Condiment King, I believe.
I kept thinking of that while watching the movie and afterwards, especially afterwards, how both Batman and the Riddler dealt with their own struggles and trauma and all that. And yet it was very easy for Batman to turn out like him, similar to the Riddler. And, you know, and he doesn't. It's like he has to fight against that kind of dark side, being sucked into the dark side.
Right.
But it was sort of like seeing two sides of the same coin, kind of, you know, with both of them.
Yeah.
And that's also kind of, yeah, like you said, that's how you see it with all his other villains, especially the Joker. But yeah. I really felt it in this one too, because they showed Batman as a loner as well as being socially awkward. He doesn't know what to do around Catwoman, you know, like he's completely like, nope, that is not Bruce Wayne. Clearly not.
Yeah.
So it was just, I mean, that was very interesting to see.
Speaking of which, Catwoman.
Yes.
All right.
Yes. Zoe Kravitz was amazing.
Yeah. I thought Anne Hathaway was a good Catwoman.
No.
Until I saw Zoe Kravitz. And then afterwards, I was like, what the hell was they doing casting Anne Hathaway as Catwoman?
That's literally what I thought. I think when I saw Anne Hathaway as Catwoman, now like 10 years ago, by the way, I didn't realize the Dark Knight Rises came out 10 years ago, but it did. I saw her as Catwoman, I was like, cool, okay, yeah. I was like, I like Anne Hathaway. I don't, you know, there's a lot of unnecessary hate towards her, and I'm like, I don't mind her. That's great, yeah. And then after I saw this movie, I had the exact same thought. What the hell were they thinking casting Anne Hathaway as Catwoman? Like, I was enraged by that. And Zoe Kravitz just got the vibe of Catwoman down so perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Without even turning her into some sexualized object like they did with Halle Berry, unfortunately. That was so sad.
That was bad. I think I tried watching that movie and I like turned it off.
I was like, what the fuck? Times. What the hell is this costume? This is just garbage.
Like, and completely impractical, by the way.
That's my point. Exactly. So,
but Zoe Kravitz also pulls off that Catwoman sexiness.
Mm-hmm. That's just what I mean. Like, she's got that perfect vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. But also just the way she walks with that like slinking away kind of thing. Yeah. Like she had that. She got the role. She got the assignment.
Yeah.
She understood the assignment. And I would say best Catwoman since Eartha Kitt.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. It was really well done.
And all those assholes who say that Catwoman can't be black.
Those same assholes would probably have joined the Riddler's army.
Yeah, they probably would have.
Yeah. And speaking of which, so another thing I want to ask you whether you got these feelings, but they were showing the Riddler live streaming and being like, hey guys, thanks for the comments. Like, but you know, it was just so like,
thanks for all the support.
Yeah. Like, and it's like, you can go buy your guns from here. And it's like, ugh. And it just, of course, it immediately reminded me of the Capitol insurrection, the Proud Boys, all these crazy ass alt-right groups and stuff, and how they do this is like where they live, right? In this underground world where they just live stream to each other and comment on each other's little videos. And part of me, honestly, while it's interesting to see it in a film like The Batman, which is based off of comics that have been around for decades and decades, but also, I don't know, hold on, I'm trying to articulate this, but at one point in the movie, I was like, is this inspiring more people to be like this? Like, I wonder if people are becoming more inspired to be like the Riddler or like Batman, because neither was very enticing in my opinion, but like, you know, it just like, And the same thing, again, I can't talk to you about this too much because you haven't seen it, but that was the exact same feeling I got while watching The Joker, where I was like, I've felt many emotions, by the way, both with the Batman and the Joker, where I was like, wow, this is really capturing what's happening in real life. And it's really fucking scary.
Right. I mean, there is definitely that component of it. Whether it inspires people who would not have otherwise been thinking in that direction, I don't know. about that?
I do have to say that I was just Googling the Proud Boys and Batman earlier, and apparently a couple of years ago, DC Comics was investigating the Proud Boys over the illegal use of their logo, of the DC logo. So like, that is some real life shit that happened where the geek world and the real world were colliding in a
Marvel has had some similar issues with the Punisher logo.
Yeah. And I'm sure with also the Captain America shield, like there were definitely people wearing Captain America shirts when they were, you know.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Storming into Capitol Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a little, people look for inspiration. I think the way I was interpreting your more, I guess, now that I think about it, probably more rhetorical question that I'm going to try to answer nonetheless.
Let's go for it.
I don't know if people who are not already inclined in that way would have been influenced in that direction.
That's fair. Yeah.
You know, a lot of these people first turn to that kind of thinking, then look for symbols to wear, whether it's the Captain America shield, the Punisher's skull, or I guess now it'll be the Riddler's question mark.
I just realized that I essentially asked a question that was like, do you think racist white boys will become radicalized by these films? That's essentially what I was just asking. I just realized that.
Yes, that is basically what you asked. I'm going to say no, because I'm going to say they were already that way.
Right.
But, you know, one thing that really struck me is how a lot of these things, whether it is the Proud Boys or I'm forgetting all these other, the names of all these other alt-right groups.
I mean, yeah, me too. We don't, you know, keep them.
I don't know. The Queen's Militia, is that one? I don't know. Maybe I think I made that one up. But like
the KKK.
The KKK. Sorry. You know, all these people, this idea of, I think it's, there's a lot of frustration. They have a lot of societal frustration, you know, in the same way that the Riddler had a lot of societal frustration, that he's using his intelligence, his smarts. He's got his target of Carmine Falcone, but he wants to do something to change everything. Mm-hmm. All right. And he decided to flood Gotham. I mean, it just like And I feel like I see the same things when people talk about like, oh, there's going to be a civil war, right? A, what is a civil war going to accomplish? And what are you fighting for? You know, like, what is the impetus to cause a civil war? And even if there is, other than a total just breakdown of American government and society, which, for anybody who thinks that we're on the brink of a civil war, we're nowhere near there. All right. Countries with far less functional governments and far greater levels of corruption are chugging along totally fine. All right. We are nowhere near that sort of a breakdown. Okay. But even if, let's say, we were, what are you trying to fucking accomplish? Like, what is the end goal? Like, the Riddler obviously did not put the two and two together of, okay, I'm going to flood Gotham and then bleh will happen. You know, what is the bleh that we are talking about here? Like, I don't know what he's trying to change. I guess he wants to get rid of corruption, but how is flooding all of Gotham going to accomplish that? And I feel like there's a lot of that. Like, when Michigan's Governor Whitmore, when this kidnapping attempt that was made against her was stopped, I was like, what were you trying to pull off here? Like, what exactly were you trying to accomplish? And how did you think that was going to work? You know, like, there's always this disconnect.
Yeah. If they were going with the whole, the Riddler wants to get rid of corruption, I immediately just thought of the whole drain the swamp and that phrase that people kept using about Washington, D.C. and the center of politics and whatever. So that's kind of interesting because I didn't think about that before. And then I agree with you where it was just kind of like, okay, and then what were you going to do after you flooded Gotham? And I feel like in that sense, they almost made the Riddler a little bit like the Joker, where I think the Joker just wants chaos, right? Like, he just wants a good time. Like, let's all, you know, let's flood this whole city and we can ride around in boats together, you know? Like, what does he want? Who knows?
See, in that sense, the Joker's motivations make more sense than these real life white nationalists, all right? Yeah. And I think actually with the Riddler in the Batman, I'm not saying this as a criticism of him. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm saying this as like an excellent reflection of what's actually happening, where people have a lot of frustration and they want to do something big and they just focus on that big thing, but then don't bother to make that next connection, you know?
Right.
It's like, come up with an intricate, amazing plan with absolutely zero thought given to the end game.
Right.
You know, like, what's your end game here? Did you actually think this through all the way?
Yeah.
All right. And with the Riddler, he obviously didn't. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you saw it in New York after Hurricane Sandy, you know, and Hurricane Irene, when the city was flooded. I was actually living in New York during both of those hurricanes, and the city was flooded, completely shut down. All right. Mm-hmm. Things got up and running again. It did not actually change anything about how the city is run.
Well, I would argue that in certain neighborhoods it did, that were really badly affected. Yes, I think it was.
Yeah, but like, it didn't fundamentally change the grip that the sanitation workers union has on the city's budget, or the police union has on the city's budget, or the different power players and brokers that exist.
In that sense, yeah, I get what you're saying.
In the city. It didn't fundamentally change that. If anything, I would say that the Riddler's goals were more accomplished by manipulating the Batman and getting rid of Carmine Falcone and his cronies than flooding the city did.
Yeah.
He would have done great with, like, if the movie had ended with the Riddler in jail being like, I got rid of Carmine Falcone and the grip he had on the city.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, somebody else may come up, which was implied.
Yeah.
All right. I would have been like, wow, this Riddler really thought things through. And he actually made a huge dent in corruption. In the city of Gotham. Bravo. But no, then he had to flood the city.
Yeah. You
know? To what end? To no end.
Right.
To no end whatsoever. Yeah. And it's because, and I think it fits in with the character perfectly. He's not just focused on getting rid of Carmine Falcone. Mm-hmm. All right. He also has a lot of frustration with society and just wants things to change, you know?
Yeah.
And that was where then the follow through didn't happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant.
Yeah. It's so true. Very true.
I'm criticizing the Riddler's thinking and his plan in terms of the end game, but it is a compliment to the movie and the screenwriters.
Yeah. Cause it's a reflection of real life that we see all the time.
Exactly.
Where we simply see people venting their frustrations with no proof of thinking anything through.
Right.
Like literally every mass shooting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what was the end game here? You know,
yeah.
It's purely a venting of frustration or, you know, I mean, it's a horrific crime, obviously, but a lot of these school shootings where it's done by these kids, you know, they're just angry and frustrated for whatever the reason is, whether it's getting bullied or they're unhappy about something, or if it's a home life trauma or whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, it is an expression of something. It is not meant to solve a problem.
This is why I think, actually, going back to our tangential thought, I think society as a whole would benefit from some sort of TV show, movie, whatever, of Batman going to therapy, because that is clearly what all these people, all these men, boys, whatever, need. Like, you need professional mental help. And I'm not even saying that in a condescending, like, you need professional help. No, like, you need a counselor, a therapist. You need to, this is why you need to learn to talk about your feelings. Use your words, not your weapons.
Which I do love that I feel like that conversation is happening more, not just in terms of mental health being destigmatized, but also I at least am seeing a lot more push and a lot more changes in like insurance companies covering mental health, you know? And I,
it's still it's just like the tip of the iceberg in my opinion, but
I mean, contrary to my, you know, modus operandi, I actually feel good about this change in society that's happening in front of our eyes. I'm optimistic. The push of improving the of destigmatizing mental health and making access to mental health easier and better, you know, it actually gives me a little bit of hope.
A little bit, but it's sadly not enough.
I mean, it's a journey.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's a journey, and we're heading in the right direction.
Yeah.
And hopefully when there is universal health care in the US, it will also cover mental health.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a new hotline for suicide prevention and mental health, 988.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's great. I'm being a pessimist about it because unfortunately, a lot of times when men do not get the mental health help that they need, they take it out on the people around them. Most of the time it's their domestic partners or their own children, or I don't know, coworkers, neighbors, friends, whatever it is, you know, like, it's like, they don't just hurt themselves physically, you know, and they end up hurting a whole lot of other people. And that's what makes me just sad. I mean, I don't know. I haven't actually had a chance to read the story or anything, but you know, in the past week or so, there was some man going around shooting homeless people in New York and DC. So they caught him. And I think two of the people that he killed, there was some story that came out that kind of investigated both the two victims and also the man who shot them. Mm-hmm. And it was just saying like, they all had one thing in common, and it was ginormous struggles with mental health. And so it's just like, I'm glad there's progress being made. It needs to be made faster.
There is no progress that has ever been made that was ever made fast enough.
Yeah,
I think, but it does give me a little bit hope that I see this slow change happening. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for a very long time, it felt like, no, this was never something that would ever happen, you know, but you see more commercials for it on TV. You see more articles about access to mental health. You see actual changes in how funding for mental health is happening, you know, and access to mental health. Those are very real things that are starting to really take root. And that's, it's not just the talk around it. It's actual hard changes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although I would say the talk around it is important too. I mean, the fact that like 30, 40, 50 years ago, people didn't even know how to talk about or describe any of the things that we've been talking about. I mean, it makes a difference.
Absolutely. But you know, it's that coupled with the actual hard changes that that make me hopeful. All right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of mental health, I loved the Easter egg in there, in the Batman, about Martha Wayne having to be institutionalized. I say that's an Easter egg because of the Flashpoint storylines. I don't know if you
in the comics
The comics, and also there's an animated DC animated movie called The Flashpoint Paradox.
Tell the story.
Okay. So in this, basically what happens is the Flash goes back in time to change, to stop his mother from being killed. All right.
Yes.
And he succeeds. However, I think the way they describe it in, at least in the animated movie, is that like, it's like dropping a rock into a still pond where there are ripples, you know, it's not immediate. It's not necessarily immediate and direct cause and effect of what happens, but just the change, just that the Flash making that change mm-hmm. causes these ripples that force other changes.
Yeah.
Even if those things happened before
mm-hmm.
The event that the Flash changed. Mm-hmm. And one of the changes that happened is that in that alley where Thomas and Martha Wayne were killed in front of Bruce, in this timeline, instead, what happens is that Bruce dies mm-hmm. at the gunpoint of this mugger,
yeah.
and Thomas and Martha survive. And what happens in this timeline is that Thomas Wayne becomes a very dark version of Batman. He becomes mm-hmm. the Batman of that storyline, but he is all about the guns, baby.
Yeah. You know,
he is shooting up bad guys left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And in this timeline, Martha Wayne becomes the Joker.
All right. So cool.
She has a total and complete mental breakdown upon seeing her son killed in front of her and becomes the Joker. All right. And, so cool. and so the reason that I love this Easter egg in the Batman is because her previous mental health issues
mm-hmm.
in a changed timeline where it's Bruce who died would completely explain the kind of breakdown one would have to become yeah. the Joker, mm-hmm. you know? And that I kind of love that.
Yeah.
Easter egg. I kind of also love that they really talked about the stigmatization of mental health to the point where Thomas Wayne, when running for mayor, was so afraid for mm-hmm. his wife that her being institutionalized would come out, that he went to Carmine fucking Falcone to quote unquote take care of it with yeah. this reporter.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And like, I mean, that's desperation, you know? That yeah. is and that speaks to the unhealthiness of the stigmatization
yep.
of mental health that has existed yeah. and still exists in many to a great extent.
Imagine how many fewer problems we would have if we would just talk about our feelings. But yeah, I had no idea about that Easter egg, and I thought it was so cool. I didn't know about the Flashpoint Paradox
yep.
storyline, whatever. But when you told me about it, I was like, whoa, that's crazy. That's so cool. Very, yeah. very interesting.
And also, just in general, as long as we're talking these other storylines, I also very much enjoyed in this movie how they pulled together all these elements from these other darker Batman storylines, like the Long Halloween and mm-hmm. Hush, or like Batman Hush, where yeah. where at least in the animated movie, and I didn't actually read the comic where this is drawn from, but it's, I don't know, should I ruin it for you, Lena? Are you ever gonna watch it?
Yeah, just it's go ahead, do
okay.
it.
Okay, like it's the Riddler.
Yeah.
All right. And it was awesome. And he wears a mask and everything. All right. To hide who he is. And, you know, and that was great. And the whole thing about Selina Kyle being Falcone's daughter, mm-hmm. illegitimate daughter and everything, you know, all from the Long Halloween and all that. It was just brilliant. Thomas Wayne stitching up and pulling a bullet out of Carmine Falcone. That was in the Long Halloween, you know,
interesting.
Uh-huh. And all that stuff, that sort of special relationship, so to speak, that Falcone has with Bruce, you know, yeah. like, hey, your daddy, he saved my life, you know, mm-hmm. like that whole thing, you know, I just loved seeing all of that happen in live action.
Yeah.
And it was done so well, you know, that's the thing. It was done really, really well, which I appreciate. I feel like oftentimes when these stories are pulled into live action, they're kind of ham-fisted, you know?
Yeah. I do feel, even though I haven't seen all of the Batman animated movies and stuff like that, I have seen some of them, and I have seen a lot of the animated like series and all that. And I have to say this is the first Batman movie where I felt the, not parallels, but like it felt like, wow, they really like took one of their animated movies and brought it to life.
And just for the record, DC animation is the shit.
It's yeah, exactly. Awesome. That's what I mean. That's what's been like, that's why it's been so sad and disappointing to see all these like failed DC movies, comics, you know, based on DC comics movies, just, you know, stink. So, I mean, and then, you know, aside from the Dark Knight trilogy, which I love and adore, will always love, just because I just thought, wow, like that, it really blew me away, you know, when the Dark Knight came out. So, but this feels like they brought one of those animated movies to life and they did it well. And
in a good way, brought it to life in a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. Because those animated movies are amazing. They're incredible. Yeah.
I mean, the Wonder Woman movie, the first one, I mean, that was just like note for note, the animated movie Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like literally they just took the script, moved it to World War I. And
yeah,
there it is.
Don't know what happened with Wonder Woman 2. That was hot. Obviously, garbage.
They should have gone back to the DC animated universe and used one of those scripts.
I don't know why. I don't know why they don't just use those writers. They're amazing.
I know. Like, and it's like the same set of people who do it too. Bruce Timm, Sam Register, Jay Olivier. Yeah, I mean,
at least like, bring them on as consultants, you know?
Like, seriously.
It's not hard.
Seriously. People. Like, you've got the golden goose right there. Like, just milk it. I know I'm mixing up my animal analogies, all right? But
yeah, that was weird.
Just milk that golden goose. That
doesn't make any sense anyway.
You know what? Roll with it, Lena. Roll with it.
Anyway, any last thought?
I feel like I had so many thoughts around this movie. Batman's tech. All right.
Yeah, that was interesting. It was old, but cool.
It was so much like early Batman.
Early
Batman should be. Early Batman who is not going to the Wayne Enterprises R&D department for help.
Yeah.
Right. Because he's a traumatized child and a recluse. Uh-huh. All right. And he's pulling his stuff together just himself. Like that was just the most believable thing to me. I think the most unbelievable part of this was the contact lens that.
Yeah.
That's a powerful enough transmitter to send video and audio to like, or no, not audio, just video with like a mile plus range. Like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Are you telling me that I know SSD cards have gotten really, really small, but are you seriously telling me that you were able to fit that much hard disk space into a freaking contact lens in today's day and age? So I do appreciate that they didn't push the tech too far.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, at some point I was like, cool, I will now roll with this.
Yes.
Suspending all disbelief. So, yeah.
But luckily I didn't have to suspend too much disbelief.
Yeah. Yeah.
With this movie. I think that contact lens was the only thing.
Yeah. That was the one. Yeah. I don't know. I honestly didn't even think too much about the contact lens, but yeah, you're right. It was a bit much. Yeah.
I thought about it maybe a little too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, cool. Yeah. Lots to think about, lots to discuss. Overall, very good take on Batman.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting much. I really was like, how are you going to top Christopher Nolan? Come on. But yeah.
I mean, this was, I would say, just as good. A very different version, but just as good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And on that note, thank you.
On that note.
Thank you.
I'm Vengeance. Always.
Oh my God, Aman, you're just interrupting me. Thank you as always for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And we'll catch you next week.
Bye.